Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Commander and Coffee Podcast, the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering, CEDH and EDH. I'm Cypher.
I'm Cork.
And my name is Y.
So today's coffee is a Colombian blend from Grateful Roast. Nice, nutty flavor, and it's delicious.
In today's episode, we have a very exciting brew for us today. Y has brought us Rafine, Scheming Seer, one of the hot new Capenna Demon Clan legendary creatures. We're really excited to take a look at today and see how we can break combat in the Esper space. So with that being said, why don't we jump in and talk about Rafine a bit?
Yeah, so quick overview of Rafine. Although I'm the one who ultimately brought the decklist forward for everyone, this process was definitely a family matter. We've all been kind of talking back and forth on what this deck can be. I think that both in our discussions and seeing other people's lists on the internet at this point, I think it's pretty safe to say that this deck is capable of doing a lot of different things. So the list that I'm bringing isn't the end-all be-all. You might have a different playstyle preference with it. And I think this deck is very good at pivoting to multiple things. And we're going to talk about the ways that I think this deck can be unique from other decks in its color pairing.
Yeah, so for our new listeners kind of going in, why don't you tell us kind of what Rafine is and what part of the card we're trying to build around?
Yeah, let's just read it off quick because, yeah, I guess if you haven't been playing a lot of Standard, New Capenna Arena stuff, it's not as on your radar as it might be, especially for like Eternal players. It's not really, you know, making waves in Legacy or Modern or anything like that. So I'm just going to read off the card quick. So it's Rafine, Scheming Seer. It is a 1/4 and its mana cost is 3 mana CMC. It costs a white, a blue, and a black. So it is in the Esper color identity. And it's a Sphinx Demon, which is sick. Just kind of unnecessary, but worth talking about. And it has flying and ward 1. So base text, it is a 3 mana 1/4 with flying and ward 1. That's a pretty solid rate to start with. I think this card is a very good early game tank. It blocks pretty much everything. Your opponents are kind of dissuaded from using their removal on it because it comes with its own Thalia attacks if you're targeting it. So it plays around just a lot of generic things. It has an interesting amount of staying power for just being like a non-hasty card. You have a good chance of surviving a turn cycle with it. So that's the base text. It's already a good rate. And then the kind of like mythic rare text on this thing is whenever you attack, one of your attacking creatures connives X, where X is the number of attacking creatures. So connive is you draw a card, you discard a card. And if your discarded card is a non-land, that creature gets a +1/+1 counter on it. So if you connive more than that, you do it that many times. So the way it functions is if you are in combat, and Rafine doesn't have to be part of this combat at all, which is another upside of this general. If you're attacking with 3 creatures, you choose one of them, and then you're going to draw 3, discard 3, and for every non-land you discard, that one creature is going to get +1 counters put on it. So, yeah, that's kind of that's the reading of the card, plus a little bit of a kind of in context what it's capable of doing in a vacuum.
Yeah, Rafine's really cool in the A, B, and C of commanders, being the card advantage engine in the command zone versus the one card win con or mana advantage, infinite mana dump engine in the command zone. Having the card advantage engine is really sweet. I'm a big fan of commanders that do that. I think they're super cool.
Yeah, also on this unique axis too, you know, building onto that, it's in the attacker's face. They're using the combat step as, you know, this draw engine is a unique axis for this commander to attack on effectively. You know, pun intended, but you know, yeah.
And there's definitely... goes without saying, there is an asterisk or two above the things that we're saying. It's not card advantage in and of itself because you're drawing a card and then discarding a card. But if you've been playing this game, you know there's a million and a half ways to play things from a graveyard, find your way to card advantage with that. We're going to go into the deck list and we'll see a couple of the ways. Notably in my list, I'm kind of looking at a reanimator strategy, discarding a large creature, seeing that there is a discard outlet in my command zone. One of the angles that I'm shooting in my deck is discarding something like a Consecrated Sphinx or a Razaketh and then reanimating. That's one upside that can come from this kind of looting effect. And another cool thing, talking about, you know, the combat step, Rafine doesn't have haste printed on the card, but its ability can, as long as you have a creature in play prior to casting Rafine, you get to activate the full text of Rafine the turn that it enters play. You cast this on main phase one, you go to combat with your pre-existing creatures, and you go to combat, kind of like how Winota does. Winota doesn't have haste, but the turn you're casting her, you're expecting to have a trigger. So same kind of play style can present itself with Rafine.
Awesome. So before we kind of get into the deck, I guess two major questions, and I'll start with this one. So what differentiates Rafine from your other standard common, you know, Esper level commanders that we've typically seen? You know, thinking of things like Xur the Enchanter, Timna Malcolm, Timna Sakashima, typically that like Esper farm style deck that people like to play. What kind of puts Rafine either over the top of them, or is it just same power level, just kind of in a different space that it's occupying?
I think the biggest comparison, at least for my deck specifically, is the two Timnas list with the Timna Sakashima strategy. I'm kind of building this, my list, as a mid-range pivot kind of line, doing some reanimator things, but I'm also playing a very large creature percentage in my deck. I'm looking at hate bears and some kind of light stacks pieces. I'm looking into a lot of permanence, basically, in my game plan, which it's harder to compare to Xur because of that, because Xur is kind of looking at its combos a lot of the time. It's trying to get that Necropotence or kind of going with an Adnod strategy, the Shimmer Xur lines. I'm not really like gunning for the fast combo with Rafine all the time. But yeah, comparing to an Esper mid-range deck, at least in my case, I think what Rafine can do better than something like a Timna is that it survives better just on its own. I feel like the upside for a Timna can be a little bit higher because you are drawing the cards. I guess you can say like Timna can potentially have a higher ceiling just based on the text on the card itself. You are drawing the cards. You are not discarding what you draw. So you can get card advantage right out of the box with the Timna. However, Timna is a 2/2. It has no other text on it, really, as far as like survivability, as far as combat prowess is concerned. Rafine is a 1/4. It survives everything. It survives Lightning Bolt. Ward 1 is more relevant than you would expect it to be. If you've ever played a long game with a single Timna in play, you can see that just a Ward 1 can be relevant enough. It may make your opponent place their removal elsewhere if they're constrained on time. And Rafine also has flying. It has good evasion. It helps it to block as well, but it also allows you to get in with damage in and of itself. You can attack into a congested board position with Rafine and get that trigger in situations where Timna might not. Another notable advantage over Timna is that Timna, your creatures have to connect for combat damage, whereas with Rafine, you just need to turn them sideways. So you're going to see in this deck list, I'm playing things like a Winota deck might. I'm playing things such as Ornithopter, 0/2 flyer. Timna, you know, you need to get a point of damage in with that Ornithopter. But Rafine, you can attack with a 0-power creature, just find some kind of safe attack. The result doesn't matter. What matters is that you declared it as an attacker. So getting a Rafine activation or multiple Rafine activations can be much easier compared to a Timna deck.
Yeah, and I think there's actually some interesting comparisons. I think the biggest difference between something like Rafine versus something like an Esper farm deck is you're not exactly drawing the cards, but you're in a sense the same way, you know, the common phrasing for Winota, you're snowballing, right? You know, you start out by connive one, and then, you know, next turn it's connive two, three, four, five. If your game plan is going the right way, you're churning through your deck so much and getting to see so many cards. And since it's a selective discard, you get to pick and choose and, you know, sculpt that perfect hand that you would want to have, which is really impressive and powerful in those type of mid-range strategies, right? And then, you know, having a little bit of backup reanimator capabilities on top of that, on top of just making creatures huge, right? Like, Rufine's one of those decks that I'm like, there's a possibility this thing can get to, like, you know, a 10-10 or something like that, and that thing's just terrifying on the board, right? Flying 10-10 commander damage coming in, like, it's not zero sum. It's not common, but it's not zero.
Yeah, what's really cool is that in most situations, Rufine takes care of itself in a lot of cases. Maybe if there's a Prom player in your pod, you might want to get one counter on it, so you can block Prom with a single counter on this thing, because it'll have 5 toughness. But what's also cool, like, when you're churning through your deck, you can make your small creatures into something much larger. That Ornithopter I mentioned in my earlier example, that, you know, it's going to be an actual threat after, you know, 2 combat steps. Now the Ornithopter is a problem. Things like you mentioned, there's a lot of upsides while you're doing your main plan. You're getting all these secondary benefits the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully that was a good overview as to kind of what's going on with Rufine and kind of what it does. So now getting into the deck list, getting into the meat of it, everyone's favorite topic. How are we winning? What are the combos? How are we closing out this 4-player game and getting the W for Rufine?
Well, let's see. We're in the colors blue and black, which means whole Ricker Horror, right? Nah, I'm kidding. It's definitely Thorgal.
So I like whole Ricker Horror, almost. The downside is that I don't have a built-in outlet for my infinite mana in this deck. I did consider Hullbreaker, because, like, a fair Hullbreaker Horror still isn't that bad.
I was actually just joking. I didn't think this was an actual
consideration. No, it's definitely worth considering. Hullbreaker is just a beast of a card, and it's a big 7-mana thing that's flash, that's uncounterable. And, I mean, if you reanimate it, like, that's within the realm of possibility, as funny as it sounds. You're not, like, going to aim to win the game with it, but, like, it's a giant thing that has a lot of relevant text on it.
Yeah, there's definitely worse reanimation targets than a Hullbreaker Horror.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, there are a couple better ones. We're not just playing Razaketh, but, you know.
Yeah, I think the functional joke, though, there was Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation, Tainted Back, your bread and butter, blue, black, you play it in every deck, yada, 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 Snorefest, boring, moving on.
Yeah, we got Thoracle in here. I mean, the deck is doing cool things, but at the end of the day, there's a really condensed 2-card combo.
Is that your only win con, or is there any other spice in the deck list that our listeners should pay attention to or look to build around?
I've got a Consecrated Sphinx, which is like a soft win the game, because you're out card advantaging your opponent by like a mile. Archfiend of Ifnir is another soft win con. It puts you in kind of a position like a Toxrill would. We see a couple Toxrill commanders coming into play now. And maybe your pods might have had one. If that Toxrill resolves, then the creatures are no longer in play for the rest of the game, because your opponent just has like a complete uphill battle against them. Archfiend of Ifnir, if you are not familiar, is from the Amonkhet set. So it came out a hot minute ago. I think it was like the gift box promo. It was some promo. I don't think it was like the game day promo. Maybe it was. Whatever. It's a 5-mana creature, and it has some text that isn't as relevant. But like the main point of this is that whenever you discard a card, all of your opponent's creatures get a -1/-1 counter put on them. So if you put an Archfiend into play, you go to combat, you resolve a Rufine trigger or multiple Rufine triggers. And as early as 1 combat, your opponent's boards can be completely gone, similar to a Cyclonic Rift, except this one is repeatable. You put your opponents in a very bad position if they are playing any kind of creature deck. That can be the line you choose to go with. And then another little cool thing that we're on, this is Quirk's idea. I'll let him talk about Chancellor of the Annex.
Chancellor of the Annex is a 4WW 5/6 creature angel with text that states, you may reveal the card from your opening hand, and if you do, when each opponent casts his or her first spell of the game, counter it unless they pay 1. Then the rest of the text is as flying, and whenever an opponent casts a spell, counter it unless the player pays 1. What's really neat about this, and what I really like about this and that in this type of deck is that reanimation effect. But people, you, how can I put this? When you reveal it in your opening hand, that just lasts until they cast their first spell. So one of my other decks that I really enjoy playing is Kirik, and there's multiple times when I could potentially turn one win. By having that, it turns me off almost instantly because I can't pay to cast my or to pay for my Jeweled Lotus, you know, or, you know, my Mana Crypt in my City of Traders. I need that to cast Kirik and then go off from there. It's just such a subtle, you know, thing that people don't realize. Also, it's a 5/6 body, and when it's on the field, it has flying, so it has the evasion, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and it's a very nice stack piece.
Yeah, one-sided sphere of resistance with more text on it besides.
Yeah, because it definitely is asymmetrical there.
And for, like, mid-range strategies, sometimes you don't have to just, like, put the biggest haymaker out on the table. Sometimes you just need to be a little bit faster than everyone else to win.
Well, how's the saying go? You don't have to be faster than the bear, just faster than the slowest person.
I was hoping you're going to bring up the bear analogy. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. You just have to be faster than the person next to you.
I mean, but what happens if you trip them?
Well, I mean, we're playing hate bears, so like we're doing nothing but tripping people.
That's why I love stacks.
Tripping is more of like a counter spell, right? They're like running and they're like, I'm going to do it. And you're like, nah, never mind.
No, tripping is when like they try to do something and you show them the onboard thing that makes them not be able to do it.
Tripping them is like, this doesn't have to go in, by the way. Tripping them is like casting a Pyramid of the Abyss at one life.
Okay, that's just because I misread the card, all right? I misunderstood how half of one was.
It rounds up, huh?
It sure does round up.
Yep, it sure does. Oh no, he was at one life. He was at six. He paid to go to one to cast a Pyramid, and he's like, Pyramid? And I'm like, you're dead. And he's like, what? I'm like, half of one is 0.5. Round that up.
And then I read it. Did some swift calculus and some quick maths, and it turns out I'm dead.
Banker.
No. I type things into a computer.
That's what banking is now. You need to be like a banker in like the old like classical Venice.
Y'all just give me my abacus.
Please do.
I'll send my abacus out. It'll tell you how much damage you take, and it's lethal. Anyways, I'll leave some dead air, and then I'll get back into it.
One other combo worth mentioning, I am running the Heliod and Walking Ballista package. It's another condensed two-card combo. Being in a creature-heavy deck, I think Heliod has some like generic upside that like it's going to be a relevant card if you're trying to win combat in your game plan. Heliod helps you win that like mid-range game if the game goes long. It just kind of accentuates what Rafine is already trying to do in terms of combat dominance in the long game. And Walking Ballista, funnily enough, also has text outside of the combo in this deck. You're definitely able to cast this on X equals one, go to combat, and get some counters on the Walking Ballista. If you put Walking Ballista like in combat as an attacker, you can choose the Ballista as your connive target. So you're going to, you know, give it however many counters and maybe shoot down some blockers before blockers, maybe just get in for damage, and then just have a loaded Walking Ballista that you spent two mana on. So that's a really cool line that the deck can do. And it also plays really well into like your standard Rafine line, because you can play the Walking Ballista on two mana, Rafine on three mana, go to combat, put a counter on Ballista. Just a really clean progression of things. You could definitely keep an opening hand with this card.
Yeah, Ballista seems really, really sweet in this deck. I like the ability to cast it for like one, basically, and then just start conniving on top of it as well. Kind of, it's not as infinite as Heliod Ballista is, but, you know, an unanswered over a couple of turns Heliod or Walking Ballista with a Rafine in play is still not a good day for anybody trying to put creatures on the board.
Yeah, I think this might be like one of the seldom found homes for Walking Ballista that isn't a big mana deck.
Let's dig into some removal. Let's talk about, now that we know how we're winning the game, how are we preventing our opponents from winning and or messing with us?
Yeah, so Rafine is definitely good, at least I hope, at the attrition strategy. Like I said, it's a pretty dense three-mana creature. So you don't need to like protect it as strongly as you would something like a Timna. Rafine can kind of take care of themselves a little bit. So we're kind of looking for removal that has other text on it, something that helps us with that connive trigger. So usually like creatures, things with flash, things with flying, any kinds of evasion are nice. One thing that I feel does it all is the adventure card Brazen Borrower, because the petty theft side is a bounce spell, and then not only that, you get to cast the creature, which is a 3/1 with flash and flying, to enable more connive triggers afterward. It just seems like it kind of does a little bit of everything you want in this deck in particular. So that is my, I feel like a lot of blue decks now have that like wonky 2-mana blue bounce spell of their choice, because people are on like Chain of Vapor or Winds of Rebuke or is Alchemist Retrieval, Run Away Together. Every blue deck kind of has one really weird calling card in that category, and this one is mine, is the Brazen Borrower option.
Yeah, it definitely feels like in this deck you want to maximize your removal, but you want it to be on creatures as much as possible, right? That way you can continue to add and develop to your board to continue conniving or rebuild if you need to rebuild from a connive while still kind of being impactful to the game plan there, right? I know Brazen Borrower was one of the few cards I looked at, you know, like late in the 99 and certain other, you know, creature-based decks. I've always looked at that card, and I was like, when looking at like, things like Edric and, you know, in some cases Yuriko and different things like that, you look at that card and you go, is this better than something like a Cyclonic Rift, or to your point, like an Alchemist Retrieval or Winds of Rebuke? Because having that body is so relevant in so many aspects of the deck list that it's worth slightly weaker, slightly on par, whatever you want to call it, cost to card ratio.
The biggest downside with it be its body, aside from it just being a 3/1, so it dies a little to any ping. I mean, it could just die to a Walking Ballista pinging away, blasting away. But it can only block creatures with flying, which is the one biggest downside that always makes me go, you know, because like I'd love to flash in a Brazen Borrower and block a Timna or something like that.
Yeah. At least with this deck, you have a 1/4, so you can block Timna already.
Also blocks and eats Chrom after combat. After one connive trigger, I mean, excuse me.
That's true. That is true.
All right. It looks like the rest of the removals kind of normal stuff. You see, you got your Cyclonic Rift. This one is on March of Swirling Mists. I know that's a big push. We're seeing a lot of faster decks, in my opinion, seem to be moving on to March a lot more, to just kind of use as a quick cleanup tool for problematic permanents that are coming into play that they have to answer. Any particular reason you chose that one in here, or what the benefit is for the March? Just needed that extra removal spell.
I just like the defensive utility that this provides as well. Being able to protect multiple creatures of mine from a board wipe is pretty relevant. Because like I said, I am on a good number of creatures in this deck. Currently on, well, it'll be 28 creatures plus my commander when all is said and done. So, I'm on a pretty heavy creature suite. So being able to protect a couple important hate bears is nice to keep my strategy going in an average game. And obviously the offensive capabilities are pretty well known at this point, being able to get rid of some kind of hate bear on my opponent's side of the field before I try to combo out. Maybe there's like an Eidolon or like Archon of Emeria in play. Removing an opposing commander, doing a relevant combo. I like the modality of it in this deck. It seems to be pretty good, and being able to deploy it for a single blue mana is a thing that this deck needs pretty strongly. One of the common bottlenecks is that being in Esper colors, you're not on the mana dorks, and you're not really on like the ritual fast red effects and dockside. So you can be a little bit constrained by a lack of fast mana. You were playing a lot more mana rocks than you would prefer to in a perfect world, to make up for it. But yeah, like having cards that cost a single mana are really nice in this deck in particular, because you can be looking at early games where you're when you really have to make decisions on what you're able to cast at certain points, when you're actually leaving up counter spells, and when you need to use your fair mana base for deploying a creature to the board. So that's a big question to answer, and cards like March of Swirling Mist help alleviate that decision for you.
Yeah, definitely an overlooked part of that card is exile your own creature with a bunch of +1/+1 counters on it that got targeted by like an abrupt decay, and then it will come back into play. It will remain in play but hidden with all of its counters on it, which is really better than bouncing it, right? That way you don't lose all that development you did on that creature while they're trying to, you know, abrupt decay it, swords it, or whatever have you. So cool. The last removal spell that we have in this category that I wanted to make sure we talked a little bit about is Thieving Skydiver. So for those of you that don't know, Thieving Skydiver, an interesting card. It's basically just designed to steal all the fast mana rocks, right? To get the crypts, get the chrome boxes, get all those off of your opponents. Kind of a harken back from the Timna Sakashima deck, right? Those Esper Farm decks, I think, was the first kind of deck that started like utilizing this card to its fullest.
Yeah, and I think the idea behind it in those decks is pretty much the same thing as why I'm playing mine. It's not just a removal spell, but it's also, because if it was just a removal spell, it probably wouldn't be necessarily good enough in the slot that it's in. The fact that you can also get a mana rock for yourself, like I said, that is a bottleneck of this deck from time to time. So being able to take a Chrome Mox or Sol Ring, anything like that, is going to help you by miles more than it might help a similar deck. So yeah, Thieving Skydiver is pretty much always going to have relevant text on it. You're going to generally kick it for X equals one. So I'm generally treating it like a 3-mana creature that steals a Sol Ring or some kind of whatever artifact. And it's also, just at the base, it is a 2-mana 2/1 with flying, which, as I mentioned in Rafine, it's an evasive flyer that can get a lot of counters put on it or just enable connive triggers anytime I need. So there certainly is a world where I cast this as a 2/1 flyer and go for the connive triggers early on in the game. So again, it does a little bit of everything I want for this deck in particular.
Yeah, like this seems to me like in the place of something like a Fragmentize, if you want to destroy an artifact or enchantment thing, you kind of replaced it with a creature that did it. Rather than text, it is flying. I don't know that many merfolk rogues that get in the air like that. So it's interesting to see that one there. I usually screw that up, and I'm like, I think it's a ground dude. No, it's flyer. Very powerful effect there too. So that's kind of what we see in the removal. So if we're looking for, obviously we're in a blue deck. We're in that deck. So how are we doing on stack interaction? How do we have it? What do we have to kind of interact with people while they're trying to win on the stack, as most players like to do?
Or is it kind of the standard blue normal stack interaction? Anything really unique to this deck?
The uniqueness is kind of like a general thing. I'm looking at a more proactive mid-rangey game plan. So I'm a little bit light on the counter magic in this deck in particular. I am looking to use my mana on my turn, deploy some relevant threats when I can, and filter my way to a game-winning strategy after that point. I feel like with this list in particular, you're not really looking to hold up a counter spell on turns 1, 2, and maybe 3. You kind of just need to get your own game plan online, get some nice creatures out on the field, start getting ready for, you know, kind of set the table for your Rafine turn so you can go to combat and start filtering your draws. I guess some like notable, like, not always used things I'm on are Dovin's Veto, just because I think that uncounterableness is very relevant. I'm going to be ideally playing that in the later game when it matters that I don't have to fight a counterspell war with someone. And because I am running fewer counterspells, so having one that ends that conversation with one card is really nice. And Delay is another important one for me, because there are other creatures that make my Rafine plan a little bit difficult, such as things like, you know, Kron being a 4/4 flyer that challenges me in combat dominance. So yeah, I think things like Delay, I think are more helpful in this deck than they can be in others. And then from there, you're just running like a million 1-mana counter spells. Like all the cheapest ones are the ones I'm looking at the moment.
Makes sense. Standard stuff for blue decks. Looking at your tutors, not to go too deep into this, but we are, again, we're in black, so we have the best tutors in the game. Notable ones I just kind of wanted to touch on really quick, because we don't need to spend 45 minutes talking about how great the Monarch Tutor is. So we are a reanimator deck, so one of the unique cards is we're playing Unmarked Grave, which is searching for a non-legendary card. What are we looking to hit off of that? Any just the obvious stuff? Archfiend of Ifnir, Chancellor of the Annex, Consecrated Sphinx. Any other interesting things you've hit off of that, or is it just that standard? Just we're looking to get those and as a second kind of entomb effect.
I mean, generally speaking, those are your big bombs, and also it's notable that Thassa's Oracle is something you can get as well. Pretty much all the really cool stuff in this deck happens to be non-legendary. You might initially think that like Chancellor of the Annex is legendary. No, it's not. You can get that with Unmarked Grave. It's pretty sick. Razaketh is pretty much the only thing that you wish you could get with it that you can't. All bets are off as far as Unmarked Grave is concerned. You can get most anything that you can get with Entomb. And notably, Unmarked Grave can also get, it's not just a non-legendary creature, it's any non-legendary card. I'm going to check that that's correct before I continue that sentence.
100% correct.
Okay. It's been a minute since I checked that.
Yeah, I was setting that one up, so you're good.
Oh god, thank you. So, the deck is also on a copy of Sabine's Reclamation that works with Entomb and Unmarked Grave. Put a Sabine's Reclamation in the bin, flash it back, and then you can reanimate two things that already happen to be there. And like I said before, the Text of Ruphine, you're filling your graveyard as you're filtering your draws. You can potentially set up a really nice Sabine's Reclamation without really pulling a lot of strings. So that's a line you can do as well. If you don't have the reanimate in hand, you can be trying to do a Sabine's Reclamation instead, which is pretty sick.
So it's just a value Sabine's. It's not a win on the spot Sabine's, right?
Technically is one. It's a bit of a setup win condition, but you can flashback Sabine's to get, Thassa's Oracle and Spellseeker, and then you can go and get the consult off of, or tainted pack off of the Spellseeker trigger, and then do the dance.
I guess that is true. Yeah, you can your pile is what then the consult, Thoracle, and Spellseeker to a degree.
If you get Savine, Spellseeker, and Thassa's Oracle, right? It's depending on your hand, it's you win. You just give me a card, it doesn't matter, because you'll flash back to Savine's for the Thassa's, cast Spellseeker, get the stuff, go off to town. Yep, doesn't matter.
The three card combos with Intuition are pretty similar to the two card combos with everything else, in that if you have one of your pieces in hand plus an Intuition, you can probably find a winning line with that. So it's just kind of case by case dependent in a lot of situations. Intuition is a weird card with a real, really high skill ceiling to it. It's kind of like the Brainstorm conversation all over again.
Yeah, and it's really just a good value card too, right? There's, you could find hidden lines throughout the deck, but for the most part, it is definitely not a, it's not a go and grab Brain Freeze or Lion's Eye Diamond, Underworld Breach, Brain Freeze shenanigans. It's a little more in depth.
Yeah, and the big brain plays in a four player pod situation with Intuition. The unintended effect of the card that definitely didn't get thought about when it was printed is that if you have player A trying to combo off, you can Intuition and have player B choose you a card that will stop that combo. So you have that kind of line available as well. It's kind of just this emergency button if you ever need to press it.
Yeah, the one thing I don't like about Intuition, but I mean it's part of that high skill ceiling you're saying, if player A is trying to stop player D from comboing out and has the one card, I'm just going to use Dovin's Veto as an example, can get the Dovin's Veto, but then can set up their combo with those two cards in the graveyard and says, hey, player C, I need that counterspell. And player C goes, well, that's your combo right there. If I give you that, you're going to win. You're going to stop him. You're going to win on your turn. And he kind of has to give him he's kind of forced to give him the counterspell. But it's part of Intuition, it's part of the game, I guess.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a cool thing where you say, I'm going to get this card that stops this player from winning, but I'm also going to put something like a Thoracle and a Sabine's in my graveyard. Wink, wink. So it's pretty cool when that situation comes up. Because then, that's a whole conversation, right? Then it's then it's up to them to stop you after that. But that is how it be.
All right. So now that we're kind of ramping up, getting through the deck list, let's talk about some of the ramp that we have available to us.
Oh, good segue. I can't clap because I'm on push to talk.
Anyways, looking at the mana rocks and the other ramp that we have in the deck list, again, it's pretty common. I don't see anything. Interesting cards in here of note are we're playing Jeweled Amulet. That's a neat card. Not a lot of people see. Is that just to help get the early game out there? Like why the Jeweled Amulet? I guess is my big one.
Yeah, neat is one word to describe it. I just say like unfortunately necessary in my situation. I mean, turn two Rafine is like the best you can really hope to do. And like if your game plan is to put Rafine out early, turn two Rafine is great. But there's only so many cards in Esper colors that enable that. Jeweled Amulet is one such card because you put a charge counter on it after your turn one and then, you know, play a land on turn two, get Rafine out, and, you know, go from there. And then because the unfortunate downside of Rafine is that it requires specifically a white mana, a blue mana, and a black mana to cast it. Sol Ring cannot save you. It's kind of like Yuriko, where Sol Ring is infinitely cuttable, as is, I mean, I don't really feel like the deck is ready to cut Mana Crypt by any extension, because you have other cards. You have 99 other cards to look at, but Mana Crypt does not help you cast your commander. That can cause some awkward situations in a lot of cases. But yeah, Jeweled Amulet gives you colored mana, enables turn two Rafine. It's kind of those. It's one of those things that I would not consider cutting.
In the same vein, being a commander centric deck, I was curious as to is it just strictly because it doesn't help cast the commander, or the basically the reasoning of not playing Mox Amber in this style of deck?
Yeah, I feel like in this deck you need the mana before your commander hits play. So the Mox Amber really isn't doing what you want it to do. Like once the Rafine's online, you're kind of doing some decent stuff already. And the extra like Mox doing a Rafine and then playing a Mox Amber, you're not really guaranteed to have a nice follow-up play. Whereas Yuriko is on a million like 0 and 1 mana creatures. This deck plays a healthy amount of 2s and maybe even 3s in the creature category. So, I mean, it could be on a Mox Amber, but like you're going to have some difficulty casting your commander if you're going just like land drop, land drop, land drop. You really want to have some kind of grease on that, on those wheels to get you to that point. And Mox Amber does not accomplish that goal. So I don't think you can really look at it like a mana source in most opening hands. You're kind of looking at it as a follow-up play to enable other stuff already in your hand. And in that category, the Mox Amber isn't really like doing anything exceptional for this deck in particular.
Okay, cool. Makes sense. I think the last card, and it's a weird one to talk about because it's a very common card, but I think it's interesting in this notion just to touch on, is Dark Ritual. This deck, besides the obvious of like, you know, Dark Ritual and Tomb Reanimate, you know, off to the races kind of thing. But this deck isn't on like things like Adnaz or Peer into the Abyss. I don't see a lot of like, you know, really besides a couple things like Oppo and Luris and stuff like that, and obviously Razaket at the top end, that you're really looking those three black pips for regularly. So what was the thought, or what's the game plan here with the ritual? Are we trying to use this for effectively here?
So it's going to sound like overly simple, and you're like, oh, that, you know, obviously, but it's like, it's not the reason this card usually gets played, but I'm playing Dark Ritual as Richard Garfield intended in this deck in a lot of cases. Dark Ritual is a +2 on my mana. I put one in, get three out. It turns out that a single use mana crypt is still a pretty decent card, especially when I'm running these higher mana creatures that are normally reanimator targets. Being able to hard cast an Archfiend of Ifnir on turn three is pretty okay. It's a thing that this deck could conceivably want to be doing. So yeah, being able to power out some large creatures or enabling an early turn where you're deploying two creatures followed up by a Rafine the turn after, and then having a really nice combat with two connive triggers right away. It just gives you some nice play patterns that in essence are kind of on the fair side, but at the same time, the things that you're deploying are going to be pretty solid hate bear type cards, or just something that puts you in a very commanding board position into the early or mid game. Obviously, you do have a way to power out fast combos in the end game. If you're looking at a Heliod Ballista combo, I mean, that is a pretty mana intensive combo to set up if both pieces are in hand at the start. So having something like a Dark Ritual does actually help you at all points of the game. It's just doing a different function in each point of the game.
Yeah, very cool. Cool. So now that we kind of went through that, let's talk about some of the cards in the deck list that don't really fall into a category. Again, everybody, deck list will be in the show notes below. So if you want to check out this full list and this full version of it, it will be down there below. But looking at some of the more interesting cards, so we don't talk about how great, you know, standard cards are. I think some of the standout cards in the deck list that for me is, I think this is like the best Esper Sentinel deck known to man, right? Rhystic Buddy just gets pumped up so hard with this deck, it's not even funny.
Yes, if you are if you're playing Modern in like the Colossus Hammer deck, if you're playing the Hammer Time Modern deck, you know how good a beefed up Esper Sentinel can be. This just guarantees you drawing 1.5 million cards.
I mean, if you're making me pay, I don't want to pay for a fish half the time. You know, you think I'm going to pay for a 10-10 or an 11-11 Esper Sentinel while it's beating me in the face? No.
Other two interesting cards, I think, in the deck list, and I'll leave it to you to tell me otherwise, but things like Ghostly Pilfer and Ledger Shredder, two really powerful cards that kind of, if Rafine's offline or to work in tandem with him, kind of allows you to continue to keep that snowball windmill velocity of kind of digging through your deck, looking for drawing cards and looking through it. Also, one flying, and then the other one being unblockable is just pretty good too.
Yeah, just having more things that set up a reanimator package is always nice. I don't want to always rely on a commander because, you know, there's a world where Rafine gets popped two times, and I'm really looking to do better things than cast a 7-mana 1/4 at that point, right? So having access to things like Pilferer, Ledger Shredder, being able to fill my graveyard without needing my commander in play, just a good kind of backup strategy. And they themselves work well with Rafine in play already. The Pilferer can be unblockable with, you know, many, many counters on it in the long game. And Ledger Shredder, I mean, we see in many formats now that this card is just a very good rate for what it does.
So with all the evasiveness, did you happen to ever think about, and the amount of counters you put on, like throwing in something like a Tainted Strike or a way to give something infect to just kind of nug some one person at a time and be like, deal with this or you're just going to die?
Yeah, I think that's a very cool consideration for the deck, is like a Tainted Strike or some other infect enablers. Scythrix could very well go in the reanimator package because you are able to get to 10 power in a relevant way in this deck, because you do get to choose what the counters are placed on, and you could very easily put it on something that, you know, may seem inconsequential at first, but then you can make it a very relevant threat. So yeah, I agree, Cork. There is a version of this deck where Tainted Strike could be a factor.
Because, like, the first thing that comes to my mind when I'm looking at, like, cards like Ghostly Pilfer, Ledger Shredder, Thieving Skydiver, Rafine herself, like, is, and especially getting those counters, and so quickly, too, sometimes, is, like, how can I just quickly take one person out of the game? Yeah, commander damage is 21, but infect is 10.
That's true. And, like, you could be on something like, I mean, it's an old classic, but like the Edric strategy where you just play 1-mana unblockable creatures, you have access to all of them because you're in blue. So, I mean, that's a package you could consider running.
Almost like the Edric flying man strategy, but with infect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yuriko as well plays like some, you know, 1-mana unblockable things.
So I wanted to divulge, and I wanted to wait until we specifically talked about this category to ask the question. What's really interesting to me, and I kind of just wanted to get your take on it, is you're both a Razaketh deck as well as a Lurrus deck, and the non-inclusion on Lion's Eye Diamond in this deck list seems interesting, as that's typically a very powerful card that synergizes very well with both of those cards to help facilitate huge mana swings and mana generations.
Yeah, I think the biggest, like, it's sad to say, like, the biggest reason not to be on LED is just in the fact that I'm, like, not on Underworld Breach. Like, I feel like the best LED combo kind of got found at this point, and it's hard to progress from that point. Like, once you know that there's better options out there and that you already have access to Thassa's Oracle combo, it's hard to find space for the LED combo. You're not really on, like, Bomberman, right? Because you don't have an infinite mana outlet guaranteed. You don't have, like, that layered combo potential. And being in a, what's often a combat-centric deck, and you'll find yourself in many games, you don't really ever want to crack the LED and leave yourself without a hand. So LED in this deck in particular is really, like, just relevant on only the combo turn. And that's just asking yourself, like, if it's worth it. And, maybe your answer is yes. And my answer is ultimately no, but that's absolutely a personal preference. LED is just, like, such a dedicated combo turn only piece in this deck that it's very hard for me to want to put it in my list. Because I'm greedy and I'm like, very fickle, and I can't run something that doesn't have other modes in my deck. Cypher, I know you love, like, to lean into the combo potential of decks. So I could see you running it. I could see you running it for sure.
I'm all into that, especially with the Walking Ballista, right? Because then you go, Raza, sack, grab LED, sack the LED, sack a creature, cast Lurrus, recast LED, sack the LED for three, sack the Lurrus, go grab animate dead the Lurrus, replay the LED, sack that. That gets you to four. Grab, Dance of the Dead, cast that gives you to two, sack it again, brings you to five, and you kind of go through the motions where you end up with Oriok, and then you sack it to go grab Walking Ballista, and then you kill them from there. So
Like, I feel like, generally speaking, like, painting with broad strokes here, a lot of combo decks potential, like, a lot of the card slots and combo decks are more set in stone. Mid-range decks, I think, have to be more responsive to the meta, and as a result, there's more cuttable slots in a mid-range deck. Like, especially if you look at Blood Pod and how that deck has evolved. There are so many slot differences in Blood Pod versus 5 years ago, even, like, 1 year ago versus today. And I think the same thing could apply here to Rafine, that there's probably, like, a good 20 cards are probably able to be swapped for something else, some other kind of package. So yeah, like, why not LED, right?
I think it's, yeah, I agree. I think for those, like I said, it's a viable role. So if you're looking for a little more of a combo style version of the pivot deck, that's another interesting way. If you want to lean a little harder into our Demon Lord and Savior, Razaketh the Foul-Blooded. Which I think is another interesting way to build the deck. I think for me too, like another interesting way to talk about viable roles is for us in the Turbo community. When this card was spoiled and we looked at it, we said, oh, look, it's a commander that draws a card. You know what another term for drawing a card is? Cracking a doomsday pile. I think that's another viable variation that I think a lot of people are kind of brewing in the space for is Rafine doomsday piles, where you can set that up as well. So to me, that's another variant you could play the deck.
And Rafine has the potential not to just crack a doomsday pile, but get the whole pile in one shot if you have multiple creatures in play.
Yeah, just draw your pile and then go from there, right? And win the game. You don't need to be doing crazy gush shenanigans. Just attack with Esper Sentinels and Ornithopters and draw your pile.
Yep, and that lets you assemble a Doomsday pile with protection pieces in it, like actual counter spells, multiple protection pieces. If you're going to be conniving for something like X equals three, you could be grabbing your first piece to get into your combo, as well as a piece or two of counter magic just that same turn. So Rafine as a Doomsday commander is really unique in that regard.
You can also still kind of hold your mid-range strategy, even with there being a Doomsday commander. Doomsday commander.
Yeah, it would require a little bit of deck building, I think, but I think you can move pivot. You can have a Doomsday pivot, like the old, what was it? The old Yuriko decks used to actually be aggro deck that pivoted into Doomsday if it needed to, or vice versa. I guess the other avenue that you can take Rafine is it's in white, so it does like the rule of Lafex, where you can take it into probably more of a slower slower saxed out version of the deck list, trying to really just grind the game to a halt and then accrue massive card advantage through your or massive card selection, excuse me, through your triggers.
And now we transition to Quirk Stacks Hour. All right, Quirk, tell us how to make people hate us more.
Well, be me is number one.
What's number two?
Play Rule of Law effects, play anything that limits like their card drawing, so Nursa and things like that. Because you're gonna get around all that stuff. All the asymmetrical hate, you can't run Null Rod effects against like the symmetrical Null Rod, so Null Rod, I almost say Collector if we're in the wrong colors. But you could run like a card in the Great Creator to really, hate on them. You could also get to run a lot of the Torp Orb effects, which are huge, and you could be off of the Thorka line in that case. You could almost make it a win conless variant.
That is true. You could be doing what's the common like Naya colors usually, right? So really the only shared color to most win conless stacks decks would be the white. So you're kind of in somewhat uncharted territory in that regard, but I think this deck is more than capable of winning with combat damage, especially like since Brafine is making anything the biggest creature on the board after two combat steps.
I think if we transition to that idea, like I think the stacked variant with the infect idea wouldn't be a terrible matchup.
I think the Singleton Tainted Strike is pretty awesome.
I agree. So looking at this list, for our listeners out there, we just had a set release not too long ago, Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate. So are there any interesting cards or flex slots or anything interesting from that set that really kind of caught your attention and that we want to kind of bring to light?
Yeah, I thought I think overall, like the cuts are still up in the air for these cards. Because, like I mentioned, the cuts could be between like a fairly large pool of options. Two cards I would like to include in this deck are kind of everyone's, like the fan favorite is Archivist of Ogma. Just being able to draw a card whenever someone cracks a fetch land or casts a tutor. The upside is very apparent and pretty clear as far as how good this card can be. The fact that it has flash is unnecessary, but it's lovely anyway. And it's a 2-mana creature, so you're casting it right before you're casting your commander. So it fits very cleanly into this deck in particular.
I love the fact that it is flash. I think that's so great. Just hold up interaction, someone casts a big tutor spell or cracks a fetch, and you're like, no, I'm not putting this into play.
And the other one, it's like the one that got ignored because Archivist of Ogma exists, Deep Gnome Terramancer. This one is not like the universally acclaimed one, but it's still very good. And in this deck, it's actually better, in my opinion, than Archivist. Same mana cost, same power toughness. It also has flash. So they kept all that the same between the two cards, which baffles me because they're also both rares. They're very similar in so many ways. The text is very specific, but it's basically whenever an opponent cracks a fetch, whenever an opponent puts a land into play without it being played, so functionally, whenever an opponent cracks a fetch land, you can search for a Plains card and put it onto the battlefield tapped. It only works once per turn, but that's okay. You really only need one trigger with it for this to be worth it. So notably, it says any Plains card, so you can get all your dual lands with it, which is lovely because Rafine has a very specific mana cost, and being able to get all your duels off this is very nice. You are on one copy of basic Plains because Blood Moon is a card that you care. I feel like you care about Blood Moon a great deal with this deck, especially the early game. But yeah, Deep Gnome Terramancer gets around a lot of things that you might be worried about in the early game, notably your bottleneck and mana costs. So yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one, and I'm really happy this card got printed because White has been kind of like circling around the idea of playing a really good ramp card, and they haven't quite done it yet. And this is finally, I feel like they finally broke the seal now.
I think on both of those cards, one with Deep, sorry, talking about Deep Gnome Terramancer, for the old school players out there, man, I remember when Sakura Tribelder was good. Good old Steve. Now this thing exists, and I'm just like, Jesus.
I miss Steve.
The fact that it gets like any Plains card, I definitely overlooked that when I first read it. I totally read basic because it's a white card, so why would it be good, right? But the fact that you can go and get like your Scrubland or your Tundra off of it when a player cracks the fetch, and Sure, it's once each turn, but, you know, player A plays a fetch, player B cracks a fetch, player C cracks a fetch. You're like, bam, that's three. That's plus three on your land base, right? That's better than some green decks can do.
It's funny because, like, the text basic planes on this card would have honestly just made it unplayable for me because I would sooner take the deck apart than play a second copy of basic planes in here.
Right? So
this just in from Wizards, they errated it to basic planes.
you shut your mouth. Moving on, the Archivist, I mean, like, one of the biggest problems with white forever and a day was its lack of ways to draw cards, and that thing is just so good in this format to help draw cards. 90% of every deck is trying to tutor in some way, shape, or form. So having the Archivist in play just totally hoses that capability. They're phenomenal cards, absolutely phenomenal cards. As a person that hates white, I'm telling you, they're phenomenal. So kind of the last thing before we kind of move on to some sample hands and some different stuff like that. Based on this deck in the meta, kind of overlooking at it, you know, when we're kind of sitting down to play, what are you happy to see? Are you happy to see a table full of fast combo? Are you happy to see a bunch of stacks decks? Where is this deck thriving? What kind of table is this deck thriving in?
Just for my own mental, like, for my ongoing mental well-being, I'm just never happy to sit at a table with all like fast combo decks. But I think the deck can perform well against them overall because you're playing things like Thalia and like Chancellor of the Annex. It's like a weird card that really stuffs the fast combo decks for some reason. So if you can get like an early reanimator on that, that's a pretty good game for you, I feel. I feel like the deck shines the most in like against other slow mid-rangey decks. Because Rafine, your creatures are going to be the bigger ones on the board. I feel like you're honestly happy to find a Timna player in your pod, or even two Timna players in your pod, which happens quite a bit, because very quickly they are not able to attack you, and you just like kind of undo the little advantage engine that they try to operate from. So I think like other combat decks are a good pairing for you, even if it happens to be something green with Collector Roof. Because you don't like Collector Oof, but like the decks that play Collector Oof, you're overall in a good position in terms of like comparing the average board state. So yeah, things like that. I think that's what you're looking to do a lot of the time. Even if their game plans turn off your combos, being able to win combat is a really nice upside that gives you a lot of leverage.
So looking at this, going down here next, you have a couple shout outs here. Any interest? Deck list here. We'll leave these in the comments below too. But we definitely have some different variations of the deck list. We have a reanimator. We have a doomsday variant, and then you have this listed as power matters. You want to go over kind of what the differences between that deck and your deck are?
Yeah. So there's a couple of really cool things that they did not make the final cut to my deck, but I definitely overlooked them in my first pass of building the deck. They are cards that involve the text, do something X times where X is this creature's power. Most of these things have a printed power of 1 because the effect is really good. With Rafine, you're giving them extra power before they connect on their first combat step. So you can be doing very broken things with these cards that are otherwise kind of clunky and not a good rate. But you easily make them a way above rate in a single attack. One of them that I guess the more recent one is like Glenn, the Voice of Calm, having 1 power, but drawing cards when you connect with them equal to the power. It's a great upside for that. And Rafine really enables that strategy. Card that no one's really thought of before this, Cephalid Constable. I'm just getting up to read it. Oh my God, they cut it. I'm going to read it anyway. I'm actually like incredibly upset it's not on the deck anymore.
They removed it.
I gave you a shout out on everything, and this is how you treat me. One moment while I Google Cephalid Constable. Or no, I'll bring it up on Moxfield. It's not even in my maybe board. I thought it was safe.
Cephalid Constable, it's a 1/1 creature, Cephalid Wizard. Whenever a Cephalid Constable deals combat damage to a player, return up to X target permanents that player controls to their owner's hands, where X is the damage dealt to that player. And just so you know, Cephalids don't police people. They police laziness.
Very cool.
I'm sorry. That's so, not this, laziness. That's loyalties. I apparently can't read.
This is a rare from Judgment because this is what the rare creatures in that era tended to look like. But yeah, it's a 3-mana 1/1. When it hits something, it bounces that many things to that player's hand, where X is the amount of damage it dealt. So you're going to hit someone for one and bounce a one thing, but you're never going to connect because it's a 1/1 with no evasion. With Rafine, however, you can make it something like, you know, realistically, you make it like a 3/3 on your first attack, and they, you know, assuming you attack a player with, you know, a little bit of forethought behind it, they're either going to be chump blocking or you're going to be bouncing three things. That includes lands. This card gets out of hand really fast, I feel. And it's like the most threatening thing in play all of a sudden. This like really, why is it worth $11? I was going to say it was like a 50-cent rare, but like, whatever, cool. This card is super weird and it's super good with Rafine specifically. And I desperately want to find a slot for this card. I don't know if it really fits in my deck, but I really hope it fits in someone's, because I really want to see this get triggered for like five and just win the game.
That's a neat card. I've never actually seen that card before.
Yeah, I actually really like it.
All right, so now that we've kind of gone over that and kind of gone through the deck list, as usual here on this show, we do like to go over some sample hands, go through the mulligan decisions and kind of walk you through what that looks like and how we want to kind of play that particular stance. So let's jump right in. Looking at our first opening hand of the day, we have a Chromox, a Phyrexian Walker, a March of Swirling Mists, an Esper Sentinel, an Archfiend of Ifnir, a Dark Ritual, a Lavinia Azorius Renegade.
This hand is absolute torture because it doesn't have a land in it. This is such a cool hand. It just doesn't have a land.
Yeah, like if you replace like March or like Lavinia or something like that, Frexen Walker, anything with a, I probably like the Walker, but anything with a land, it probably gets so much better, right?
This is so wrong, but like you could Chromox, pitch Lavinia, cast Esper Sentinel on turn one.
And Frexen Walker. Know,
if like you're first in turn order, I might even just keep this, you know? You put an Esper Sentinel in play on turn one, and you get a draw step besides, just because it's a multiplayer format. I mean, you get like a divination to find the land. Oh no, you drew a card and it's a Vampiric Tutor. Oh no.
Yep.
But like, and then you have like the Dark Ridge, just play like an Archfiend of Ifnir. I don't know, and then you discard to hand size because you don't draw any more lands the rest of the game, and then you just win. You just stumble yourself away into a win.
I'm mulliganing this hand.
Yeah, I'm still mulliganing it. That.
Yeah, I mean you're not wrong, but like I want to live my dreams.
All right, our next hand is a Swamp, Brazen Borrower, Animate Dead, Island, Marsh Flats, Brainstorm, and Snow Covered Island. Hey, we found the lands.
Okay, this is a very conservative hand. You do have the perfect Brainstorm in hand. You got the Marsh Flats Brainstorm. So turn two, you can get three nice fresh cards to look at. You have an Animate Dead in your opener, which is pretty cool. So you have like half of a really cool line. What is this hand? A hand of, well, this is still our second seven, right?
This is our second seven.
Yeah. There's a lot of unknown stuff with the brain. It's a lot of unknown potential with a Brainstorm and a Fetchland. It's probably not good enough to keep as a second seven. I think you can do a better six with it, unless you really believe in the Brainstorm.
I'm on, you want a dork on one, you want a Rafine on two, and attack with the dork. So, well, zero to one drop creature. So I'm probably shipping this one.
Yeah, I feel like with this deck, Rafine on three is pretty respectable. I mean, you're not going to find like two lands Chromox every single opener, right? It's not going to be like, it's not a blisteringly fast deck. But yeah, I do agree that if you don't have a fast Rafine, you should be looking for like a turn one or turn two creature at least.
All right, our next hand is an Esper, our Mold of Six, excuse me, is Esper Sentinel, a Watery Grave, a Reanimate, a Necromancy, an Arid Mesa, a Timna the Weaver, and a Felwar Stone.
Oh yeah, that was something I missed. We're playing Timna in the 99 because it's like very adjacent to what Rafine is already doing, except you're like going to get in for combat damage much more frequently. So yeah, Timna's here. Anyway, yeah, I think this is a very solid six. Turn one Esper Sentinel is nice. You have a turn two Felwar Stone. Yeah, you have some options. I think you just pitch the Necromancer here because you already have a reanimate in hand. It's just kind of redundant that you don't need. So you have the reanimate for once you're cycling your draws a little bit with connive triggers. And until you get to that point, you have both Raphine and also a Timna alongside of it. So you're going to be seeing many, many cards between the Timna and your commander and your Sentinel. I think this hand lets you open up into a lot of things as the game progresses.
I agree. I think this hand's dependent on the table though, because it is a little slow, right? Like you're a little hopeful that people feed your Sentinel a little bit, right? Because like the rest of your hand is just kind of like a spell. You're waiting for an action card to activate, and then some mana, right? So, and then you have your Raphine on 3, Timna on 4. Like it's a weird. You have two competing 3-drops, so it's a little weird. But I think if it's a slower table, I'm happy to take the grind.
Well, one potential thing that you might come across is that turn one Sentinel, turn two Felwar Stone, assuming you draw a third land by then, right? Turn three cast Raphine. You still have your Felwar Stone now, right? Turn three is Raphine, but it's also potentially on 4 mana that turn with your Felwar Stone being cast the turn prior. So you could be doing a Raphine, going to combat with Esper Sentinel, and you could be conniving to discard a reanimate target that same turn. So that's a possible line that you could be looking to do.
Cork, anything?
No, I would snap keep this one. Putting back the Necromancy, leaving the reanimate in case I got something. Just because I could go into turn one, like he said, turn one Esper into turn two Felwar, into turn three Raphine, and then attacking with the Esper is just, I think that's chef's kiss.
Not to mention that your Esper Sentinel is then a 2/2, so you're going to see cards with more frequency at that point, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you just definitely get incremental value, and it just creeps up on them.
All right, this next hand. So that was our keep on 6. So our next 7 here is a Scalding Tarn, a Snow-Covered Island, a Dothi Voidwalker, a Tarnished Citadel, a Sea of Clouds, a Walking Ballista, and a Silence.
I'm a pitch on this one, mainly because it really just doesn't do anything. It just kind of sits there.
Yeah, like Dothi is a good card, but like I'm not keeping the hand just on a Dothi, right? So.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see what we can do better. So this next hand, the second 7, it is a gemstone hand. So as per usual, we'll do a hand of us on the play and us not on the play to see how we handle if we decide to keep. So this hand is a Demonic Consultation, a Thieving Skydiver, a Grim Hireling, a Timna the Weaver, a Dovin's Veto, a Gemstone Caverns, and an Exotic Orchard.
I'm in the camp that if we are on the play, we pitch this, but if we are not on the play, I would keep. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to stick to my guns. I'd keep this.
Yeah, I keep. Like, you really want to find a third land here. Like your turn one is what, like a blind or a non-kicked Thieving Skydiver, and then hoping to find a third mana source. So a little bit awkward in that regard, but like, I don't know. I mean, there's certainly worse hands to keep, and like the Gemstone Caverns is a great upside. And I think you just try your luck and try to draw that third land in 2 draw steps. That's my risk reward kind of thought.
All right, so yeah, agreed. On the play, this thing is gone. On the draw, we'll keep. What do you pitch into Gemstone?
Maybe just the Grim Hireling, just because like there's no guarantee of getting to 4 mana here, and I think that really all you need is the 3 mana with this current hand. You have a very solid base to go off of, because if you hit 3 mana, like you've got a Timna the Weaver, you've got a Consul, you just need to find the other piece for. Yeah, I don't think like beyond the third mana source is something that you're looking for with this current hand. So maybe it's just that. Because Timna, you're gonna see a bunch of cards anyway. I feel like you want to cast the Timna before you're casting Grim Hireling in many cases to find things to cast. So pitch Grim Hireling or pitch Consult.
Mine's Grim Hireling.
Yeah, I'd probably pitch the Grim, I think. All right, let's do one to two more. All right. So our next hand is a Felwar Stone, an Enlightened Tutor, a Fierce Guardianship, a Thassa's Oracle, a March of Swirling Mists, a Marsh Flats, and a Polluted Delta.
I'm shipping this hand.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit on the lame side, huh? Let me do the math in my head for a sec. Does this actually get you to turn to Rafine? You know, funnily enough, this is actually
with the Jeweled Lotus, it does.
It is a turn to Rafine hand. It's just the dumbest way to get there. Because on turn one you Enlightened Tutor for a mana crypt, and on turn two you go land mana crypt. The mana crypt plays a Felwar Stone, and then with the Felwar Stone you cast your commander because the mana crypt doesn't. So it is a turn two Rafine. Your follow-ups just are kind of like, you're kind of just waiting for something else at that point. So, yeah, you can probably do better.
Yeah, it's nice to hold up the Fierce, but like, it's also a turn two Rafine that's not conniving, right? Like, you got to wait until turn three to attack with it. I'm kind of not a fan.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just dumb that like, the best line is like, you're going through all these hoops, you're getting a mana crypt just so you can cast a Felwar Stone.
All right, this is our second seven, I think. We're going to go second seven because I forgot. It's a Hollowed Fountain, Force of Negation, Grim Hireling, Timna the Weaver, Ottawara, Ghostly Pilfer, and Verdant Catacombs.
Snapkeep. This has a beautiful curve.
Yeah, this is like, this is definitely on the fair magic side, but I do enjoy it. Ghostly Pilfer on two. I mean, that's a really good starting point, right? Yeah. I mean, nothing to really like hate too much about this hand, right? I'm not going to complain too much here. It would be nice to draw into a blue card to pitch to force otherwise. You're really upset if you have to pitch like Ghostly Pilfer to a force early on. But the fact that you can is nice. You know, you'd rather have the ability to than not have it at all. So, ideal world, you curve out Pilferer into your commander or a Timna, depending on what the board state looks like. If you can connect with a Ghostly Pilferer, like, without worrying about it, then, you know, maybe you just cast a Timna on turn three. And then once you get a Grim Hireling in play, then I feel like you're going to be drawing a lot of extra cards. You're going to be able to cast whatever you draw at that point. So Hireling shores this up if you make it to the late game. I think this hand is snap keepable if you see other mid-rangey, slower decks in your pod. I wouldn't keep it going fourth. Let me say that. I would not keep it going fourth.
Yeah, I think that hand's good enough. So very cool. We'll do one more, I think. The other thing that drives me crazy about this is we've had like Timna in all of our freaking opening hands too. Like, I swear to God, this shuffler is garbage.
I think Moxfield is just being like, bro, just play Timna.
It's telling you.
Just like, I tried to make a case for it. Yeah, I tried to make a case for it, but they're like, nah.
All right, this next hand is a Reanimate, a Flooded Strand, an Archfiend of Ifnir, a Scrubland, a Scalding Tarn, a Tundra, and an Archon of Emeria.
Okay, so I mean, like, you have the Legacy line where you just discard the hand size and turn two get an Archfiend in play. That's like, that's a thing you can do. If you think the Archfiend is really good against that pod, then maybe that's what you do. You can probably do better. You can probably do a better second seven, though, if that's not like the line you want to be on.
I agree with that.
I mean, I'm a big fan of just, you know, draw your card, discard your card, go to town, but I probably would ship this. You're right. Second seven. All right, so our next seven is Ornithopter, Dark Ritual, Dranith Magistrate, Enlightened Tutor, Walking Ballista, Flooded Strand, and a Talisman of Dominance. Now, this one could be interesting. Because this one, you could Flooded Strand to Dark Ritual out the Talisman on one, and then you can cast a Ballista. You can cast Ornithopter and Ballista on one. Is that good enough? And then you have two mana, so if you draw another source of mana, then you get to turn two Rafine. Or you can just untap and cast Dranith. All right, this hand's worth talking about.
This one's really interesting because it's a one-lander that has so much potential and lets you just drop so much on turn one. I mean, it's Flooded Strand, Dark Ritual, into Talisman of Dominance, into Ornithopter, Walking Ballista, just on turn one. You turn two, a Rafine off that. So good.
There's another line where you cast the Walking Ballista on X equals one, and you can get Heliod with Enlightened Tutor, and that lets you Dark Ritual Heliod combo afterward.
A little more setup in that one though, right? Because you're not casting Ballista on.
Yeah, the Dark Rit has a lot of functions here.
Yeah, this one's interesting. I think there's a lot of play here. I have generalized hatred of keeping one land in hand, so I don't know where I would end up on this one. This one would be a toss up for me, but I could see myself potentially pitching it. But it is really cool in what it can do. I mean, even just like Flooded Strand into Dark Ritual into Talisman into turn two Drana seems really good. But interesting. All right, guys. So that is kind of looking at some of the hands and what the sample hands look like. Obviously, Rafine's a really cool deck. It's a really interesting concept in the Esper colors, having that draw ability and that capabilities there. So just kind of throwing it out to the group for one last kind of rundown.
Yeah, it's definitely a really neat deck. It has some unique axes to attack on, and really, really looking forward to playing it more and seeing what develops as new sets come out and what cards can be placed in there to kind of accent the deck a lot better. Like, one of the cards we didn't talk about is Containment Construct, which, you know, revolves around discarding cards, which Rafine does a lot of. But I think that's, you're discarding them for a reason. You know, if you're playing in second main phase, it's kind of interesting, so.
All right, guys. Well, that was another episode of Commander and Coffee. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, links to the deck lists we talked about below will be down in the show notes. Please feel free to follow us on all of our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Go ahead and give us a like at Commander and Coffee. We'll be there to answer all your questions if you need. And as always, keep on brewing. For this episode of Commander and Coffee, I'm Cypher.
And I'm Cork.
And I'm Y.
Later, everybody.